You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM. Welcome back to the Batuta Advocate radio show. Just me, Clancy Overall, this week for today's interview. Errol is in isolation. He keeps things pretty quiet when it comes to his romantic life, but it turns out Errol does have a new flame, and she's come up on the ice road, Bourke, Cunnamulla to Batuta. The local authorities actually found out before that she'd come from Mildura. So, I mean, their little dirty weekend was exposed, and they're both in isolation now, and she's looking at big fines. Possible jail time for Errol's new filly. Probably not a front page because she's not an African teenager. So she's...
She's not.
No, that was his ex. And today's guest, rapper, writer, actor... And now... African teenager, when this album drops, he'll get a front page and they will be declaring him enemy of the state.
Did they put a question mark on that?
No, that would have been better.
Like, was that enemies of the state?
Enemies of the state. We don't back this headline. It's red hot.
Yeah. Enemies of the state?
Enemies of the state?
Briggs, thank you for joining us. You're also now, and we'll get into this, a children's book publisher, illustration...
Yeah, I had the biggest kids book in the country at a point. Me and Bluey.
Yeah, you're Bluey. That is stiff competition too, because that's a cult.
Bro, he's got a TV show. Like, I can't compete with that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm only on TV sometimes.
I'm only part of a TV show.
Yeah, I'm only like a little bit. Like, I'm not. It's not the Briggsy show, is it?
No. It's Pickering Feet Briggs.
Yeah,
but I guess.
And then even like Disenchantment, like I'm only like. A little bit.
I mean, yeah, some would argue that it's your show and Matt Groening's just helping out.
Bless him.
Despite the fact that he's producer and creator.
He's a big old dirty creator. Children's book, author, you know what I mean?
What is the name of your book? We'll plug it from the top.
Our Home, Our Heartbeat. So yep. Make sure if you've got kids or thinking about having kids or trying to practice or even if you know some kids.
Or you're rooting.
Yeah. Just get a book just in case.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
keep
yeah.
one, you know, break in case of emergency.
Our Home, Our Heartbeat is in theme with a song you released a couple of years ago. Is that the go? You did a song with Archie Roach?
Yeah, we did the Children Came Back, like a sequel to They Took the Children Away, which was like, you know, again, that was all about celebrating Indigenous heroes. And that's what this book is about. Yep. It's about it celebrate Indigenous heroes and all the contributions to various industries and platforms that blackfellas have had over the last, you know, couple hundred years.
Now, we've seen the last couple of years, social media's obviously changed the news cycle a lot for a lot of black kids at home. They're seeing a lot more stuff that they wouldn't have seen on Triple M or Channel 7 growing up. What were the heroes that you saw just immediate that you were exposed to, other than, you know, what your parents are telling you?
Yeah. I think, like, for me, like, being a black kid, it's like it's all sports, right? Gavin Wanganeen, you know, championship bomber, Brownlow medalist and that. And then it's like, you know, Kathy Freeman, obviously. Yeah, so it's always Lionel Rose, even though, like, that was way before my time. But
you heard about him.
Yeah, Lionel Rose could bash people. It's like, that's pretty sick. Put that on my wall.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, black families, we just love to see black fellas win.
Yeah.
That's always been a mainstay. Jonathan Thurston come along. It's like another one.
Yeah. Another goat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 2015 feels like it was a pinnacle at that point. And, you know, there's constantly records are being broken. But, you know, to have two NRL teams in the grand final with two black captains was a big moment for,
You know, sports. You know, it becomes a thing of, like, you know, even where I'm from, I talked to this today, you know, where we're from, our family from the Cummeragunga Mission, like right on the border of New South Wales and Victoria. From that mission, you've got the Sapphires, William Cooper, Sir Doug Nicholls, who was like a championship footballer, and also, you know, the first governor of South Australia.
Yeah, right.
Jimmy Little, who was a pop star. We've also got like Tony Briggs and a gang of other footballers, David Wirrupanda, et cetera. It's like, at what point does that stop being an anomaly?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when there's so many.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of weird now.
Yeah, it's like because like you know obviously like there's me as well.
Yeah,
and then there's Deborah Cheatham, like who's an opera singer. So there's all these other
and a lot more than sport.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like there's all these different levels.
Yeah.
Of achievement, you know what I mean? Like from this one little mission.
Yeah.
And it's like, at what point are they no longer outliers and now this is the norm?
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
This is just what happens here. Yeah. We create. Mm. Like this is in the DNA of this place.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's your people and your people have proven themselves in all fields. As you have technically, you know, across the board, you've proven yourself not just a rapper. I haven't seen you play sports, so I'll rule that one out until I see
it. Let's just talk to it.
yeah. No, I could have been a world beater, mate.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Slipped a disc in my back. I could have been anything.
The Melbourne Storm came to my school.
Yeah.
And they let me tackle the bags.
Yeah.
and they really wanted me to continue to do that.
Yeah.
But I told my old man about it. And like, you know, this is AFL country.
Yeah, yeah,
this
is
back when Storm first arrived. This would have been like 97.
Yeah, yeah, Lazarus. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I told Dad, I was like, oh, Dad, Storm want me to come and train. And Dad was just like, bah.
Just not happening.
I'm not taking you to Melbourne every week.
They need to win like 8 premierships and I'll start paying notice. They're almost there.
I could have been a championship Storm player. Imagine that.
Could have been anything, mate. But as I said, I haven't seen you play sport, but have seen you rap, have seen you writing on the screen, and those skills are spread right across your community. It's similar things happen around the world, you know, particularly in towns where you know the narrative is these people don't have it too good.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Like, you know how like on Wikipedia pages they have like alumni of It'd be interesting to see the alumni of these missions and like the families from these missions You know, from Kempsey to Moree to Wilcannia to
Sherbrooke. Sherbrooke's a good example. They got buddy Eddie Gilbert bowled out Bradman.
Yeah, they didn't like that. They don't talk about that.
Yeah, they changed the laws to make sure he didn't play again. But, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff coming out of Sherbrooke. A lot of, and, you know, pastors count. They count. You know, a prominent pastor, that counts.
Bro, well, Sir Doug Nichols, Uncle Doug, was a pastor as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, and it's similar to Brooklyn do the alumni in the States. You know, they had Basquiat, Biggie, all kinds of sportsmen.
Birthplace of Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Bernie Sanders.
Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson's from Brownsville, the baddest man from Brownsville. You know, like Bed-Stuy, obviously, big, you know, Marcy Projects.
Yeah.
You know, with Jay-Z, Hove.
Yeah.
I love, you know, that's one of the games we play, like, you know, top five from the boroughs. You know what I mean? Which borough's better?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it always comes down to Queens and Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I prefer. I really do like Queens, though.
Mm.
Like Nas, 50.
Jamaica Queens.
Bro, 50. 50.
Yeah, yeah.
Bro.
And look, again, spread his skill set across many different fields. vitamin water.
Especially his social media. But yeah, like... It's interesting to see, like, you know, from all these adverse, I guess, situations, what kind of leadership they kind of create.
You feel like excellence is kind of normalized.
Well, you have to be excellent.
Yeah.
It's like, because if you don't, you get, and I think that kind of like intense, like, you know, that situation really creates like a lot of, you know, people with some good stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, pressure makes diamonds.
That's the flex, yeah.
Because I remember, and I probably mentioned this on the podcast before, standing out front of the Auckland Casino, I was rather refreshed, and there was this big bunch of kids wearing Moleskins and RMs, and I said, what are you fucking Queenslanders doing here? Big bunch of them. They go, we're from the South Island. I go, whoa, cool. South Island, you dress like, cause, and then I was like, oh yeah, you're all country. The first thing they said to me was, we're from the same town Richie McCaw's from. And I was like, I know that there's so many people in the South Island saying that, because that's all they got.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the excellence is kind of, I mean, that's not all they've got, but like the excellence, that's their beacon. Whereas where you're from, you've got everyone. You've got every field.
Yeah, there's all these different like people achieving things in different And I think that kind of talked to like everything I wanted to do. I was like, well, I could do that. I could have a crack at that. Like I didn't write an animation until I was on Groening's show, Disenchantment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like not a lot of people cut their teeth at that level.
In LA, no.
Yeah. Yeah, in Malibu. Yeah.
Do you think there's something in that though, in terms of you know, where you grew up? There's a little fake it till you make it, because you know you could have kind of come back quietly on a plane and never told anyone about that trip again, but you just jumped on it.
Yeah, I just never, you know, at that point, I'd been like, by that time anyway, I was like, nah, mm-hmm. I'm on. You know what I mean? Like, I'm giving it a shot.
Yeah.
There was no reason to not have a crack.
Yeah.
Like yeah. That was always where I got to, like, because I wasn't so much of a confident kid as I was performative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't really get the confidence until I was well into my music career.
But you definitely had the attention seeker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, bro. Oh, bro. 100%. I was a performative. I was a jerk.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a loudmouth.
The entire family at Christmas just like, oh, here he goes.
Here he goes. This fucking kid. You know what I mean? Like, I was always performative, but like, you know, performance isn't always confidence.
Mm.
There's a thing that sets you apart that can allow you to get out there. But I don't think people realize when you're on stage, you know, when you're doing these things, how much control you actually have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it looks like you're walking on a tightrope, but up there, like, I'm pretty safe.
And you've been on some stages where, I mean, obviously, you're at the point in your career now where people are rocking up to see you and they're paying to see you and they know what they're getting. But early on in your career, probably the only black artist on the bill.
Yeah.
And you still kind of have to wrangle that crowd.
Bro, I did that last year in Europe.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, like, the Hoods.
Yeah.
Hilltop Hoods, yeah.
I traveled Europe with the Hilltop Hoods as the opening act. And like, it was like back to square one.
Really?
Yeah, but it was like, I don't know, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
It was like if you put a professional fighter in the ring with like someone who didn't know he was a professional fighter.
Yeah. Or an audience.
Yeah.
An audience who didn't know he was a professional fighter.
You know what I mean? Because I felt like I was ready. Because I was like, oh, I know this by the back of my head. Like these guys don't know me from a bar of soap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, majority. And it's like, I've done so many shows.
They don't really understand English either.
No. It's so funny. And they're like, but they were so receptive.
Yeah.
But like, they didn't know who I was. Mm. Well, majority didn't. And so it's like, here's an opportunity to take a crowd that doesn't know me. I've been doing this for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Go in.
Yeah.
It was just me and a MIDI controller.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And a laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
Old school. Old school.
Like, yeah, that is very pub gig.
Bro, bro, bro. Like with the full like having to use my comedy skills as well. You know what I mean? Because it's like after a song, I had to kind of like figure out how to walk back to my MIDI controller and load up the next song and like make it interesting so it just wasn't so jarring.
So you're putting the next track on?
Mm.
That is some pub gig shit. Like,
bro,
you walk up to the laptop like, uh-huh, yep, just... Click, click.
So, like, I made the MIDI controller, like, part of the show.
Yeah, right.
So, like if I held up the MIDI controller, I'd be like, everybody, cheer for JT 2.0.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everyone would be like, ah. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I made him part of the show.
Yeah.
So, he had his own, like, little personality.
What's it like touring with those guys? You started your career probably in that world with the Hilltop Hoods.
It was so funny, man, because, like, 10 years before it, they took me to Europe. You know what I mean? And then it's like out of nowhere, I'm back in Europe with my mates again.
Yeah.
And bro, like they're so seasoned. And like everybody's kind of old now too.
It's polished?
Including, bro, they're like beyond polished.
They know how to get out of each other's face after a gig.
Bro, we all know how to do. Mm. Like everybody knows how to not press the buttons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like on these buses. And like it's weird sleeping on a bus, man. It's weird.
Five other blokes.
It's not so much that. It's just like I don't feel like I really slept at all.
Mm.
Like I felt like I was kind of holding on in my sleep a little bit.
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people probably haven't slept on those you know bunks.
Mm.
You know, it's really difficult.
You feel every motion.
Oh, bro, it's nuts.
Yeah.
And like I was smart because like I picked the front bunks, which I learned halfway through, are actually the bigger.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, you fools. Now look, it is I, the one who can stretch out a little bit more.
Well, those guys are, I guess you'd say, mercenaries now.
Bro, they are so tuned.
Mm.
Not to say they don't feel it, but they are tuned. You know what I mean? Like, they are well-traveled.
Tell me what happens on a tour like that, because you've obviously done a few with a big bunch of, with a big crew. You guys will pull up in a town. All right, we've got 6 hours till the gig. Or the next day, we've got a day until we leave.
Yeah.
You don't go near each other?
No,
we do. You'll go hang out again somewhere?
Yeah, like, because, like, you know, we'll pull up and, like, yeah. Some of us will, some dudes are like, you know, I'm just going to sit on the bus and sleep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
now it's not moving, yeah.
Because I'm like, I've never been to Prague. I can't not see this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll give you a rundown. First, like, you'll pull up from the night before. You pull up somewhere. I'll look out my little curtain. And then I'll see where I am. And, like, sometimes it's like, oh, that's beautiful. And sometimes it's like, that's a homeless man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of homeless people.
Bro,
yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And then, like, because I'm on first, that was the difference. The Hoods didn't have to do sound check. I had to do sound check because, like, well, it's just me.
Part of being the opening act.
Bro.
Yeah.
So every day I had to go do sound check. So I'm a coffee fiend, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I need coffee. So the first thing I do is I get on my Wi-Fi, little portable Wi-Fi thing, and I find a coffee spot. And then if it's, you know, within an hour walk, I'll just walk to it because I need to get off and get some blood.
Yeah.
Come back, set up merch, set up, you know, meet the merch person, jump on stage, set up my stuff, do the sound check, wait around to do the show, pack up all my stuff. Then I'll drop all the files from the show, from my GoPro, do some social stuff, post that. Jump back up on stage, close the show.
A song with them, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, with the Hoods. Jump off stage, grab as many water bottles as I could.
Yeah.
Because, like, bro, when you're on the road, that stuff is gold.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Water is gold on the road. And then, like, back on the bus, off to the next city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, some of the drives were horrendous.
It's a real job.
Yeah, and then, like, we had to get on a ferry sometimes too. Like, when we went to Dublin.
Yeah.
Dublin was lit.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it was. And they would have known you. They're across world, like, music from around the world. So
I had like 18 hours in Dublin, and that was some of the most fun I'd ever had in my whole life. They were ready.
Well, is it better performing in front of people who can understand English? I mean, obviously they all can understand to a degree what they're listening to, but like every word's getting to these people.
Yeah. England. I think it's like also like, the difference just in our sense of humor is very different from Germany or you know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
Yes. Thank you for making the show. Yeah. But like, I don't know. I just feel like Dublin was way more ready.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To get amongst it. You know what I mean?
Drill's going off in Dublin. It's going off right around the world. I mean, just hip hop in general has kind of been able to mature in a lot of countries outside of the US of late. England was one of the first, kind of, you know, off mainland North America. And then, and obviously you've seen it in Australia. It's matured. In the last 2 years, you've seen, I mean, you guys, I guess, are looked at as pioneers.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I'm old now.
Yeah, well, the Hoods are older, but you kind of came up under them.
Mm.
And then now there's a big crew coming up under you. Peripherally to all of you, there was a scene.
Mm.
I guess you can say there's a direct line of DNA between the Hoods and, you know, some of these guys coming up now that are getting millions and millions of views on YouTube.
Mm.
But, you know, for that peripheral thing, that you know, Aussie skip-hop thing isn't what these kids grew up thinking they were going to do.
Nah, no. It doesn't exist anymore.
Nah.
Good.
Yeah. Barbecue rap. It's over.
Yeah, it's like, and I said this a while ago. I was like, man, hip-hop in Australia missed a lot of cues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when I was first getting into hip-hop, like, or into the hip-hop industry or scene or whatever in Australia, it was very much kind of mirrored on the underground scenes of New York and LA, Dilated Peoples and Nonfiction and all these kind of underground you know, rap stuff, all the raucous stuff was pretty wild, but it was not, it was like, I don't know, it didn't really speak to me wholeheartedly. It wasn't the whole picture of what I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I just felt like it missed its cues. Like it didn't have the Public Enemy moment.
Yeah.
And it didn't have, you know,
or the Fuck the Police moment.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
Or if it did, it wasn't on that level.
Mm.
So it felt like the foundation wasn't that lit. And I feel like that's why when we did AB Original, we hit so hard, because it was like it was a piece missing.
You were kind of burned down the house a bit too.
That was part of it.
Yeah.
But I felt like there was that piece missing, and it's like, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it was like way after.
Yeah.
But it was really like that piece of the puzzle, that place on the mantle.
I'm sure you kind of cast a net over all of the real American hip hop fans living in Australia who just didn't see anything they liked in what Australia had to offer.
Yeah, yeah.
Until that point.
Yeah, and a lot of people would say, like, it's not like we don't like Australian rap. It's just like we prefer this other stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't so much like a lot of people were hating on it, you know, because like the Hilltop Hoods do stadiums, multiple sold out stadiums. I know a lot of kids are on the buzz right now, and they, you know, it's like, bro, I don't know when we're going to see that again.
Yeah.
Like, that is phenomenal.
They slotted it.
Bro, you can't, like, they are beyond genre now.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, they are beyond it.
Australia's Jurassic Park. No. I fucked that up. Australia's Jurassic 5.
Clever girl.
But also Jurassic Park. Yeah, sure. Yeah. They're running their own asylum. Yeah.
No, it's like 1993.
Yeah.
All the dinosaurs are loose.
Sam Neill, Newman.
They're loose in the front paddock.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Jurassic Park. Australia's Jurassic Park.
Clever girl.
Yeah. Speaking of, though, when you look at it now and there's so much going on, you've got your Hooligan Hefs with his trance kind of zip-zip.
Yeah.
And then you've got the full-blown Adelaide white boy kind of sad boy rap, which is refreshing in any capacity. And then you've got, obviously, you know, all the Koori and Islander stuff that's popping off, and African. It just feels like it's all happened at once, and it just feels like it's just... What is going on? Can you tell us what's happening from an industry perspective? Are they just like, whoa, miss those guys? They've got 10 million views. Didn't know about them until 10 seconds ago.
I think it's like finally it's catching up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the voices that need to be heard are being heard.
Yeah.
Like the way technology is now, it's a more international, like there's not many territories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The way people receive music, the way people find music has changed. Like when I was their age... Old man Briggs.
Yeah.
I was selling CDs out of the back of me Falcon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
the Wagga Sporties.
Bro. 100%. Like, you know, waves.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, my thing is like, I give a salute to Cursor for really being the dude, I feel like, who really kind of pioneered that.
Mm.
You know, like
told these kids you don't have to
do
anything other than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon Cursor was like the first dude that I, you know, could take notice of that was like doing it his way, you know, billboards and doing it big. And like, I loved it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like he wasn't necessarily-
And not doing it with anyone else too.
With his brother, right?
Yeah.
And like-
brother and a security guard.
Yeah. Like what a good team.
Yeah.
I'd watch that show.
Yeah.
I'd watch that show. But like, I just feel like that's dope.
Yeah.
Cause like, you know, we make completely different tunes, but- You know, my appreciation for him is there 100%. And like, and recognizing his success as his own is really important, because I feel like he gave a lot of juice to a lot of these dudes coming up on that YouTube world. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the 1-4s hitting all these notes that they're hitting now, and Hooligan Hefs, all these dudes who are doing great numbers and doing amazing things. It's like this is just the next wave.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be another one.
Yeah.
We were the wave once.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, I just hope the boys are getting their money right, holding it down and being smart and, you know, looking at building, you know, their enterprise, building their business. You know what I mean?
And we take a break from this interview to give you a heads up on another podcast. If you like Batuta Advocate, if you like Hello Sport, And if you like the grade cricket or you like anything like that, if you like listening to AM broadcasts of cricket and rugby league, then you're going to love this podcast. Lunch with Lee, short stories over a long lunch. Shane Lee, former Australian cricket sensation, a legend of pyjama cricket, Shane Lee sits down with local and international guests who have reached the top of their fields, and they share their stories about the heady highs and the dismal lows of life. So grab a cold one, relax, and enjoy your weekly lunch with Lee. Do you think there is a little bit, and we'll start talking about the other work you've done in a second, but do you think there is a little bit of right now everyone in the actual music industry, we're talking the like red nose suits at the very top, are as aware of this as everyone else is?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would have to be aware of these guys pulling a million views in a week or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So like someone's going to tell them. But do they know what it means?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's a whole nother question. Cause like, you know, it's a buzz at the moment. Everybody's on.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of when it was all popping off back in like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, for us.
Yeah.
It's like everybody was a rapper.
Hoods are getting sunset at Splendor.
Yeah. And it was all starting to build, you know what I mean? And from the hoods, there was like, you know, all these other...
Obese and...
There was all these other dudes who were coming up and that's just the nature of the game.
Yeah.
You know, but like, do the people... Like, I don't think the people up top really appreciated that until much later.
Yeah. Until they get a sterilized version of that who's a white kid who...
Yeah.
Drilling.
Yeah. Like, bro.
Like Elvis. Elvis or Eminem.
Just wait. You just got to wait for the FIFO driller.
Yeah. It's Kieran. Kieran 1-4.
Kieran the FIFO driller coming through.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, man, I don't feel like the people at the top, you know, it shows in like in all of our entertainment. Yeah. Like I've just seen a new.
They rarely catch fire though. They rarely catch a fire in their hand.
Yeah, it's always a little bit late.
Yeah,
but just look at the entertainment and stuff that we have. It's like Paul Hogan.
Yeah.
He's got a TV show. Like you know, no one asked for that.
There's a lot of time warp.
I didn't ask for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's like the old guard in Australia is still very much.
Well, they're older now.
Yeah.
They're even older. Where it's like. I mean, you could.
They just don't die.
You could have the funniest. I mean, Paul Hogan was found, I guess the yarn is he was found. He was working on the Harbour Bridge. You could have a 23-year-old bloke working on the Harbour Bridge right now, but they're not going to look at him this time because they know what they like. You know what I mean? There could be the funniest bloke in Australia right now, the funniest woman in Australia could be working in a Mitre 10 in Logan, but they're not going to get found because they're going with safe bets.
Yeah.
And
well, Paul Hogan's still doing it, so why would we get another one? Why do we need that badger tradie bloke?
We've
already got a Paul Hogan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
Paul's decided to fly back from Venice Beach. Why the hell would we go look for someone else?
Why would we get the other guy? I don't know, man. It just says a lot. You know, I know Ronnie Chang loves it.
Yeah, Ronnie Chang does run that. He does run that angle. It's like, tried and true. I mean, he is right in the sense that the ABC would gladly run Monty Python episodes again every night if it meant like, yeah, and it probably would get the same numbers on the ABC, right?
I get it again.
Yeah, again and again. But yeah, there's not much investment in the things coming up, which is what a lot of people have kind of found. And sometimes that talent, you know, they go and get jobs. And everyone misses them.
And then suddenly they go to America and it's like, you think you're too good for Australia. You didn't think I was good enough.
Yeah, that definitely does happen. I mean, I'm trying to think of the example who did that.
Rebel.
Rebel, Iggy, you know? But Iggy was more of an experiment for
Iggy,
America.
Iggy wasn't like...
She didn't come through the...
She's not a creator.
No.
She's a bum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, she doesn't... She didn't even write her own stuff.
I mean, Gang of Youths is an example of that. They went overseas. They went to London just to work with people who could see that they were coming up. And
shout out to Dave.
Yeah, he's been a guest on here before.
Big love.
Now, tell us when you were a sweaty mid-20s bachelor rolling through...
Scumbag.
Yeah, rolling through hip-hop pubs. Ugh. Not clubs, hip-hop pubs. In rural New South Wales and Victoria. Your mind was in hip-hop at that point. You were a rapper for the rest of your life. Was that how it was? Mm. Or you kind of saw yourself diversifying?
No.
Because you certainly looked like you were going to be a rapper for the rest of your life.
100%. Yeah, before I went to the show, I would have been knocking long necks back in the car park.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like really living up to that stereotype.
Mm. Yeah, you had the chin strap with the little goatee.
Yeah, yeah. I look like a complete like terror squad member. I look like a complete like I got the terror squad chin strap in the fan mail. You know what I mean?
You're leaning back.
Working on my lean back. Yeah, like I don't know. Like, when you're that age, like you don't really think too much about the future. I don't think. Like, well, none of my mates really did.
Anyone who's got a 5-year plan at 20 is lame, you know, in the eyes of everyone. And no one does.
No. Unless you're an investment banker.
Yeah, unless you're born to rule, member of the Young Libs, you'll, I will have pre-selection in West Melbourne by the time I'm 24. Like, not many people think like that.
No.
No.
So, like, yeah, I was not thinking too and, like, I'm living check to check and show to show.
Couch surfing.
So, like, I was just operating, man, and trying to live. Like, just trying to, like, I was nice on the microphone. I knew that.
Mm.
I could rock a show. Yep. Knew that. And I was just trying to ascend to the next rap level here, whatever that was.
Did you become a slashy, like a, a diverse talent, be it before or after the AB album?
Before it.
Yeah.
Before it. Because, like, I kind of cut my teeth writing my film clip treatments.
Yeah, right.
And
so Bad Apples, you were well and truly a rapper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you were doing those video clips. I mean, we all remember the Bad Apples video clip was...
Yeah.
And I remember you'd done that like a Western.
Yeah.
Which was different for especially hip-hop in Australia at that time.
But it makes sense for where I was from.
Yeah, well, you're certainly not an urban artist.
No, not urban at all. I didn't cut my teeth writing scripts until Black Comedy.
Yeah.
Because I was always like pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my, good traits.
Yeah.
And
volatile, aggressive, flaky, unreliable, but
but
funny.
Funny sometimes.
Yeah. On my day.
No, but I knew how to put together an idea for stories and stuff. So like, and I guess like being a storyteller for so long, you kind of gather a knack for it. But also like my heroes wrote movies too.
Yeah.
Ice Cube, Ice-T, all these dudes. Like, and I love movies and I love sketch comedy.
Yeah.
Like Chappelle, And I was big into comedy.
I mean, you were also of a golden generation where the kids had Simpsons on every night.
Bro.
Everyone had that.
Had to.
And that was, like, that wasn't low rent either. To have that on primetime television, that was some of the best writers in the world. You had Conan. Groening.
The man.
Yeah.
Josh Weinstein and Bill Oakley, David X. Colin, John Swartzwelder, all these great minds. And, like, I watched every episode of The Simpsons one time when they first started releasing them on DVD.
Yeah.
I watched every episode with the director's commentary on. That's how I learned how the show was ran.
Yeah,
that's how I knew who did what. Because I was like, how does this show work? It's my favorite show.
Mm.
I'm going to learn.
Yeah.
And I watched every director's commentary on. When Twitter came about, I started following like the producers and the writers of The Simpsons because I was like, it's Twitter. Who do you follow? Yeah. Writers. And I was like following them and then one followed me back and it was Josh Weinstein.
Yeah.
And he was like your music. I was like, sick. Is this Josh Weinstein from The Simpsons? And he's like, yeah. I was like, bullshit. I started breathing through my teeth and typing back on my iPhone 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's how it started for me. Like my work for Disenchantment.
Yeah, right. And you would have had rappers also.
Yeah, like when Ice-T.
So Ice-T, that came out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere.
No one put him onto you?
I don't know who put him onto me or how he found it.
Yeah, you don't know how that happened.
No, but he posted it and was like, this is that real shit.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, psh.
Yeah.
Bro, that's, praise from Caesar, dude. Yeah, like, that's one of the goats, man.
Well, one of the absolute originals.
Ice-T, man. Yeah, like one of the godfathers, actual creators and godfathers of gangster rap.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's nuts.
Mm.
You don't get props like that.
Nah.
And like
then you get to open for him when he comes here, right?
Yeah. And it's like, bro, bananas. You know what I mean? Like, like this dude.
He's also SVU.
Yeah, bro.
Shit's nasty.
Nasty.
Yeah.
A motherfucking Ice-T, bitch.
What did he say to you when he hit you up to open for him?
Because we started following on Twitter. He's like, I'm trying to come out to Australia with body count.
Yeah.
It's like, it'd be great. I'd be like, man, I'd love to do that. Mm. Like, that's all it was. And then like my friend, who was like the showrunner, for it. Like, I was like, yo, Ice wants me on, or us, you know, AB on for body count. It was like, bada bing, bada boom, it's done.
Yeah, right.
And then, like, you know, every night hanging out with Ice-T. It was crazy. Like, you know, we were doing a sound check and he came up right to the front barrier while we were doing a sound check, me and Charles. I'd never been so, like, low-key intimidated.
Yeah.
Like, this is Tracy.
He's got a coffee.
Yeah, this is like, you know, this is like ice cold Tracy.
Yeah.
And man, it was like.
On your toes.
Yeah. It's like, all right, now we really got to work. And then he like started crip walking to one of the joints and I was like, man, look, all right, I'm going to take a seat.
Yeah. So, you know, as you said before, you feel like a bit of an old head now, and that's only because the kids coming through now are like 14.
Yeah.
But you also, when you diversify yourself across a lot of fields, I mean, a lot of the stuff you're doing is you're just doing stuff. You know, enchantment is not black comedy. You know what I mean? But you've done black comedy, and you've done the you know, the black rap album. You've done the AB original album, and you kind of find yourself in this world. This is from the outside looking in, anyway, where people look at you as almost the youth voice that, you know, like you get presented as a, I mean, an activist, you know what I mean? But a youth activist, because like there's old guards everywhere, but predominantly the...
probably because I'm a little bit younger than them.
Yeah. Probably because you're a little bit younger than them. You kind of get the call up. And you know, and there's men and women in that space. There's lawyers. There's people with all kinds of different angles. There's health professionals. But I guess you're the media trained artist, writer.
I think I give a good quote.
Yeah. Give a good soundbite.
Yeah, I got a good soundbite, and I kind of fly off at the handle real quick.
Yeah. Give us something red hot, Briggs.
It's all the stuff you want.
Yeah. But, you know, it was interesting during the Black Lives Matter movement when it really kicked off a couple months back, you published a note online in solidarity with the, you know, African-American community, and that was probably before it had become global. That was still when it was very much Minneapolis at that point. There was a lot more to come. We're definitely not saying that you were the reason for that, but that was kind of shared around a lot, and a lot of people kind of look to you in those moments. How do you kind of handle that kind of that's a bit more than being the rap guy that can offer advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think because, like, I wasn't going to say anything because I felt like a lot of people had already said what I needed, what I thought. Like, I'd just be, like, you know, rehashing and retelling someone else's story. But – so, like, I waited for a little while to really think about it. And then I thought to myself, it's like, you know, I've got a lot of good mates from the States, my black friends in the States that might appreciate, you know, a message like that, just to know that they're heard. Because I think that's, like, where a lot of the frustration, you know, the violence can erupt from, is, like, when you just feel like you're being ignored.
Yeah.
It's like, how long can you be ignored by? So it's like, it's really, I feel like for me as well, in those moments, just to know that you are reaching people and that other places are paying attention, it does mean something. But I also wanted to bring it back home for here, because it's like, it sometimes it feels like Black Lives Matter is an American thing. It's a global brand. You know what I mean? It's like, we've had our protests every year for so long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, people haven't not seen them.
Yeah. Right. We've shut down the city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
in
or
the
cities.
80s, you know?
Yeah. And so, like, I wanted to remind people that it's like, we have our own homegrown protests. Like, don't look at America so shocked when people are dying in custody in Australia. I posted a black tile, mostly because Chuck D did it.
Yep.
Like, Chuck D did it, and I was like, I take a lot of cues from Chuck D. He's one of my heroes.
He pioneered those moments you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. And so, like, so I did it because Chuck D did it. But the next day, I posted a thing that was like, what are you doing today? You know, you posted your black tile yesterday. You know, what's your relationship with Indigenous Australia today? Or is it just a brand exercise for you?
Or just a club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or do you feel like a bit like, oh, I better post this, otherwise everyone's going to think I'm a racist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
More respect not posting one if you don't mean it.
100%. Yeah. Like, and even if you don't, even if it's not about, like, not meaning it, even if you don't know where you fit and you don't feel comfortable posting this because maybe you don't feel like you understand enough to stand in solidarity. Like, a lot of people are still figuring this shit out. Yeah. And, like, sometimes you just have to have a little bit of patience and let them figure this shit out if they're trying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, there's always this thing of, like, I'd rather someone stand back and be like, you know what? This is your moment to talk. I'm just going to stand back here and not post a black tile.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I reckon one of the best things I've seen out of this is when, like, the Selena Gomez's and Taylor Swift's or whatever were lending their Instagram accounts to
activists and
like that's a good moment.
Yeah,
like, you know, that's something that I feel like can shift you know, thoughts, and because, like, look at their audience, right?
But you remember 2016, they were talking about the Black Lives. It was actually written off in mainstream media in America that the Black Lives Matter movement were fringe and they were, like, radical.
Yeah.
And over the last couple of months, that's now a household word. And it's not, there's no radical about it. There's just, it's a movement and it's something in the psyche around the world.
What's interesting to me, though, is, like, does that resonate here, or is Black Lives Matter an American thing? So, Australians recognize it as Black Lives Mattering here, Indigenous lives, or is this solely about America and George? It's like the difference of, like, is this the UK office or the American office?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, which brand is it? Because, like, we've had deaths in custody here, and, like, you know, Australia as a collective has a really good way to you know, history and pattern of being pretty dismissive.
Yeah. Deflect.
Well, you shouldn't have got in trouble with the police then you wouldn't have died in custody.
That was one of the great headlines that I saw during the Black Lives Matter movement was by Hard Times, which is like the hard rock kind of newspaper satire in the States. And they posted a photo of the Minneapolis police station burning, and the headline was, "Well, maybe the police station shouldn't have broken the law."
Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, it'll be interesting for me to see, like, how, you know, I guess that's the cynic in me as well, is like, how much Black Lives Matter do Australians like resonate, like reflect that here, or is that an American brand to them?
I think there were a lot of stats that rocked a lot of kind of Joe Six Packs sitting at home. Like, a lot of people were like, you know, those numbers that Indigenous activists have been talking about, waving signs about.
Yeah, but now they're on like a little square with a color, and it's like, it's really easy to read.
Yeah. I guess guess they're just engaged. But that's an interesting point. Is Black Lives Matter American in the eyes of the quiet Australian?
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, I also, like, you know, one thing around is, like, I try not to demonize people who are late to the party. You know what I mean? As long as they aren't trying to walk into the party and own the party and like, this is horrendous. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, one thing,
here's,
like,
here's an acoustic guitar.
Check this out.
Yeah.
You guys like Oasis? But one thing, like, for me, like, I'm not saying everybody has to do this, but myself, I'm trying to be a little bit more patient with people who probably haven't caught up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the education system failed and continues to fail black followers, but also in the same, you know, horrendously, but also at the same time, they fail other students as well by not teaching them the truth.
Yeah. I mean, the Black Lives Matters movement, you'd argue that's one of the things they're fighting, to have so many Australians just find out the other day that Australia had slavery. That was really, really weird.
The Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Blackbirding? Yeah. Yeah. Huh? That is all part of it, you know, revisionist history or just, you know, half-told history. But speaking of what you're saying here is that, you know, gently kind of bringing this conversation to people, you know, who are trying to learn. Is AB doing another album?
Yeah.
Speaking of gentle.
Yeah, I can promise you, like, we definitely are.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, it's probably not the album for those people.
Yeah, that's not so gentle. No.
Nah. Like, that's not what we make.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, me and Charles, we can't not work on it.
Mm. Yeah.
We talk to each other all the time, every day.
Yeah.
We're always working on something.
Yeah.
It's like everything that we make, or everything that we made over the last couple of years since, it just hadn't been, it was cool for then, but it's like, is this what we want to?
Yeah.
It's like, no, not yet. We don't have to adhere to, conventions of industry or anything like that. We make what we want when we want. That's how we did the last one.
Yeah.
So it'll drop when it's ready to drop. You know what I mean? Like, just because you brand a cop car doesn't mean we're going to make an album.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on, hurry up. Yeah,
come on.
Black Lives Matter's nearly over. but you do have your own stuff coming out. And we started the show with the plug for the book, Our Home, Our Heartbeat. But you've got, you actually, as of the weekend, you dropped a new video clip.
Yeah, Go to War with Thelma Plum.
Mm-hmm.
We dropped the video and it was dope. You know what I mean? Like, to be able to talk to the idea of black followers walking in two different worlds,
mm-hmm.
and the idea of the palatable black,
mm-hmm.
and what that is.
Yep.
Australia seems to like us when we are, you know, dancing and oke it up and practicing culture and being true Aboriginals.
Unless it's during a football match.
Yeah. Stop it.
He didn't need to do that. He didn't need to do that.
I don't think that was necessary. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
We had two documentaries to explain that.
Like why that was okay. And yeah, like, you know, the idea that it's like they like us on buildings, but not in buildings.
Yeah.
You know, these gigantic portraits and stuff of black folks around, but like, look at the employment rates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's great. Mm. Gigantic portrait, sick. Yeah.
Bondi Surf Club's got an Aboriginal flag out the front. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
lit.
There's no black lifeguards down there. There is on black comedy, though. That's a good skit. Yeah.
But like, but you know what I mean? Like, the idea of like, they like us on the building, but not in the building.
Yeah.
I feel like if Australia collectively was able to recognize these stats as racist, because like racism feels like for a lot of people, like almost like this mythical energy and name calling and not this real tangible thing, but when matter of fact, it really is. Like when you can look, like the biggest killer of Indigenous Australians isn't the police, it's the health system.
Yeah.
Like that's where we die. I guess that's not as romantic, you know, and it's a bigger job.
Yeah.
Not to say that, you know, it's any less important because it's horrible because people have a duty of care to make sure that people survive and make it, you know, through this and make it through these things. Like that's not.
And one thing that helps, you know, fix that problem in certain communities is having black doctors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like the education reform.
Yeah.
And all those kinds of things. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like there's so much to talk to, you know, and that's what I try to do in like a lot of my videos and work from Shep Life to now. It's like, how many ways can I, you know, address these issues? Mm. You know, even with Life is Incredible, talking about the death mortality rate, you know what I mean? Like, you know, real barn burning, you know, barrels of laugh stuff.
Yeah.
Real hilarious things.
Know, it was a good clip.
but you know what I mean? Like that's what the video talks to about the, you know, how exhausting it can be to exist in these two worlds as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of asking the audience, it's like, you know, what's your idea of what an Indigenous person is? And they like us when we're dancing and painted up, but you turn your nose up at the bloke on the street because, you know, you're not sure what his connection to his identity and his community and his culture is.
Yeah.
So there's a bigger picture to the video as well, yeah?
Well, I mean, you're putting those messages out in a lot of different channels. I mean, you got the music, you got the book, you got your writing. When are you going to write your, you know, you might even write your own adult fiction sooner or later, young adult fiction.
Briggs Austin.
Yeah, 50 Shades of Black.
Yeah. every shade was blacker than the last.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it's a big year for Briggs. Thank you for joining us today on the Tudor Advocate Radio Show. We hope Errol is all right.
Give him my best.
Will do. And, yeah, good luck with the new music to come.
Appreciate it. Cheers. Your life.
while you're living with your mother. That's a mad stress. That's a rad dress. That's collateral. That's a bad mess. Don't poke the bear. You catch these hands, no games played, no poker here. No rewind, no freeze frame, just focus in. I'm closing in. Whoever's got an issue, bring whoever's got a problem. I'ma fuck them all up with you. Must be twisted off of that yak. Lifted off of that crap. You must have missed a bit when I lit the bitch and put this all on my back. Consistently, and that's fact. Anybody wanna call, and I got the right if anybody wanna fall, and I'm going in if anybody wanna war, so don't say a thing if you don't wanna go to war, and we're going ay, 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 ay. Yeah, we're going ay, 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 ay. Yeah, I'm going. Thought you were killing it. Pass the torch, you couldn't carry the flame. Never speak my name, that's par for course. You couldn't light a cigarette. Ooh, you thought you was bigger than all these doors I'm kicking in, all these tours I'm getting it. All this sniveling, boring, talking, bickering, sickening. Man, I'm done with all this back and forth, back and forth, back to back. We back on tour, back on court, back on court. Can I give the word if anybody wanna talk? Wanna talk? Can I give the word if anybody wanna talk? Wanna talk? Motherfuckers mad, I'm the nicest. Crosshairs, lockstep, shit that I'm precise with. Yeah, I might trip. Who you side with? It's a main event. You a sidekick.
I do not like you. You and I are not the same. Say what you want, what you want, what you want. Won't say it to my face.
Yeah, I got the answer anybody wanna call. And I got the right if anybody wanna fall. And I'm going in if anybody wanna war. So don't say a thing if you don't wanna go to war. And we're going, hey, hey.